From WNYC, this is The Sporkful.
When you want a little bit of the old, you can still find it. I mean, I look at my grandmother's old apartment, and it's funny because her name is still on the door buzzer there, and she's been dead for a while. But if her name was not there, it doesn't take those memories or anything away from me, and it doesn't take those feelings away from me. If they knock that building down tomorrow and put up a glass high-rise, I'd definitely be bummed out. But there was a little bakery that she'd sometimes send me to get bread for dinner, and that bakery's long gone. But I can still walk past that and remember that feeling. And I think what's nice now as an adult is I can walk past and remember that feeling and then think, I should go get some bread.
Today on The Sporkful, I go out for curry goat with comic Wyatt Cenac. You know him from The Daily Show and his stand-up. He's a really funny guy, but we're going to have a mostly serious conversation. We'll talk about the West Indian foods he grew up with in Dallas and New York. And I'll ask him how he feels when he looks around a restaurant in a historically black neighborhood and realizes everyone else in there is white. Stick around. This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. The food in an area is often an indicator of the type of place it is. When the food starts changing, it's usually a sign bigger changes are happening. Wyatt Cenac has always been really aware of those types of changes. And he talks about it a lot in his act.
It was a bad neighborhood. There were some dudes who lived next door who tried to rob me when I was a kid. They lived right next door. And that's, like, it's sad when you think about it because it tells you all about how people gave up on that neighborhood, how people just gave up on kids like that. Nobody went to those kids and got in their ear early enough and said, like, hey, there's more to life. Like, you can dream bigger. You could rob people who live a few blocks away. Like, people who don't know exactly where you live. That was Crown Heights back then. That was what it was like. It's weird, because Brooklyn's changing. All of Brooklyn is changing. In Brooklyn now, there's a store that just sells mayonnaise. Like, that's it, just mayonnaise. Nothing else but mayonnaise. Which I am convinced it is a front for the mob. I've called the FBI multiple times. They've just said, hey, thanks for the mayonnaise. And I can't prove that it's a mob front, but what I can prove is that it is probably the most cartoonish, stereotypical image of gentrification I have ever seen. Like, it is downright racist to white people. Like, oh, it's your neighborhood now? You'd love a mayonnaise store.
Wyatt was born in New York to an African-American mother and a West Indian father. His parents split up when he was about one, and when he was three, he moved with his mom and stepfather to Dallas. But in the summer, he'd visit his grandmother in Crown Heights, a West Indian neighborhood in Brooklyn. So he feels a strong connection to both cities. Wyatt and I met up at The Islands, a Jamaican restaurant in his grandmother's old neighborhood. It's been there for 14 years. It's a tiny place with, like, 12 seats. It's tight quarters, and not just inside. Outside The Islands, gentrification's closing in from all sides. We feasted on curry goat and oxtails. We drank sorrel, a sweet drink made with hibiscus flowers. They were out of roti. That's the flatbread that often goes with these foods, but still. It was the best curry goat I've ever had. So soft and tender, and just the right level of spice.
My mother ate a lot of spicy food. Maybe that's why she liked West Indian dudes. Because she used to talk about how she would eat hot sauce sandwiches when she was a little kid. So she was just eating, like, hot sauce. And then my stepfather, you know, was curry, jerk chicken, a lot of those types of things. Like, Tabasco sauce was just kind of like, that was just the regular sauce.
A lot of restaurants, maybe not so much in a place like this, because here, this style of food is, like, sort of slow cooked. So it's kind of already cooked when you get there, because it's been cooking for hours and hours.
Sure.
But there can be, like, I think that they do, I've been told from people who know that they alter the spice level depending on the ethnicity of the customer.
There's a place in Nashville. It's a Nashville hot chicken place. Yeah, there was a sign that said whatever their levels of hot chicken were, that, yeah, white people couldn't have a certain level of it.
Just take one.
You don't eat a lot of spicy food?
I mean, I'm trying to get better. I just don't, I didn't grow up eating it.
Did you grow up out here?
Yeah, I grew up in the New York area, but, like, my family's Jewish. We grew up with, like, mostly, like, pretty classic American food with some, like, Jewish ethnic food. We just, like, spicy food was never, like, a big part of it.
Right.
So I just never really acquired that much of a taste for it. But, I've definitely built up much more of a tolerance to it, and I do enjoy it. But I just don't, like when something's so spicy that it's, like, that becomes the point of eating it.
Right. But a little heat's good for you. They always, I feel like people say, like, on a hot day, like a hot soup or like some kind of spicy is actually somehow better. Like, it helps cool you down or something.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that's true. We should look into the science on that. Sweat is meant to cool you down. I guess if it makes you sweat, in theory, it could be helping to cool you down. I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Well, I guess if you're hotter on the inside, then the outside seems a little cooler.
You clearly have a strong personal connection to Texas and to New York, but there's this through line of this food, you know, the West Indian style food that brings back strong memories for you of both places. And it's interesting to me that, like, those two places are so different from each other in a lot of ways, but the part of what you associate with those places is actually the same food.
Yeah. Well, 'cause I think in both situations, it's family that connected me to both places. It's Uncle Glenn's coming over, we're making oxtails. Whenever my grandmother would come to visit from New York, my stepfather would ask her to go to a roti shop that was down the street from where she lived called Gloria's. And so he'd have her go to Gloria's and pack a bunch of roti skins in her luggage. And then we'd freeze them. And
good move, freezing.
On special occasions, we'd get to
break out the roti skins.
Yeah, thaw a couple out and eat them. And it was this very precious thing because it's a lot of work to make those. We didn't have a lot of West Indian food in Dallas. There was one place, there was an ice cream place called La Belle Creme. And on Sundays, they would make curry. They were West Indians, and they owned an ice cream shop. And I have fond memories of my stepfather and I going to this ice cream place to go get curry. And it was always a sort of special thing because I don't think they did it all the time. And one of those things I think about a lot when people kind of talk about the foods they grew up with, and especially in this country when we think of American, you know, oh, what's an American meal? And for me, it was oxtails. It was curry chicken. Those were as much a Sunday dinner as, you know, red meat and potatoes. That's what I associate with my childhood in southern red state Texas.
Coming up, much more with Wyatt Cenac. He'll talk about how it feels to go out to eat in the neighborhood where you grew up and suddenly feel like an outsider. Stick around. In case you missed last week's Ramadan show, I just wanted to encourage you to check it out. During Ramadan, Muslims fast from dawn to dusk every day for 30 days. I talked to a wide range of them about what that's like. Muslim American teens told me about the pranks they play on each other.
I remember one time when I was younger and I was taking a nap and my sister woke me up. And she's like, Nermin, wake up. And I was like, why? What is it? She's like, it's time to eat. And I go to the kitchen, I'm the only one, and I'm eating. And she comes back, she's laughing at me. And my mom, she's like, Nermin, why are you eating? I was like, Lean told me it was time. She got in trouble for it.
And I went to JFK Airport to ask fasting cabbies working 12-hour shifts how the holiday affects them.
Well, I will be having a passenger somewhere, so I have my supplies in my cab. So I will be breaking the fast somewhere on the highway with the passenger in the back.
Plus, I talked to a Texas-born food blogger about rediscovering Islam after 9/11. She shares this gem of an anecdote.
I had a friend who worked for the Saudi embassy in Houston, and she's not Muslim, but she So she went, you know, she went to lunch during, it was during Ramadan. She said she came back and she saw one of her coworkers who definitely was Muslim crouched behind a car shoving a Big Mac in his mouth. So, and he gave her this look like, don't tell anybody. So even the best of us managed to, you know, slip a little. So
that's right.
Yeah.
One Sporkful listener tweeted, "The episode's fun, and you'll learn more about religion than you'd expect from a food podcast. So I hope you'll check it out. That show is called Breaking the Ramadan Fast in a Cab at 50 miles an hour." Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC. I'm Dan Pashman, and I sound horrible. Why do I sound so horrible? It's because I have a cold. Why didn't I sound like this when you were listening to me just a few minutes ago? Because this part of the show is being recorded separately. Why? Because I decided we should add in a little bit more of Wyatt Cenac's comedy.
Let's all put on our imagination caps. Maybe it's a nice summer day, early in the summer, so it's like low 70s. It's a Saturday. It's beautiful outside. There's a nice breeze. And you and your friends are like, oh man, you know what would be great right now? We should do some day drinking. Yeah, let's do some day drinking. Yeah, oh, we should go to that bar that we like. Yeah, the one with the outdoor space, and they have that DJ who plays cool music. Yeah, let's go there. Yeah, and you're like, oh, you know what would be great? We go and we hang out. Maybe we'll meet some people. Yeah, we make some friends, and we drink, and we watch the day turn to night. You're like, yeah, you put on your good clothes, you head out the door, and you show up to this bar, and it's filled with babies. Because apparently that's a thing now, where parents just bring babies into bars. You used to get arrested for that shit. Like, I've been to bars where parents are having birthday parties for children. Like birthday parties for babies, and have the nerve to get mad at me, like, excuse me, can you move your drink? My baby's trying to crawl here. Don't hinder her ability to explore. There's just something about that. Like, look, if I can't go to a gymboree and get shit-faced and make out with somebody on a seesaw, stay the fuck out of my playground.
We talk about gentrification here from time to time because I just think food's so tied up in what happens when neighborhoods and towns change. Wyatt Cenac also talks about gentrification. He covers it at length in his stand-up special, Brooklyn. And when we were out to eat, I asked him why the issue was so important to him.
We all want to have something that we feel is ours, but also something where we feel remembered, you know, that like even after we're gone, this place will not forget us, that this inanimate neighborhood will remember who we were and what we did here. And to me, what I find interesting about it is that it always winds up being cyclical, because even those new people that move in, at some point they'll be the forgotten ones.
But I think it's interesting, like if we talk about the place where we are right now, right this moment, if I can kind of set the scene for listeners, it's this very small restaurant. We're in this sort of cramped upstairs. It's barely even a two-story space. I don't think I could even stand up upright in this upstairs, but it's very...
You gotta crouch a little bit.
Yeah, but it's very charming, and the food is outstanding and authentic. But one block from here is a very desirable place to live. And you get worried for a place like this that's been here for a long time making great food. Like,
oh yeah, at some point, is the rent going to get too high?
Is the rent going to get too high? And when new people move into the neighborhood, is this the food they're going to want to eat?
But also, as new people move in, are these the people you want to serve food to?
Are you saying they don't want me here, Wyatt? Is that what you're saying?
I think they like you.
Okay, good.
Yeah. He lets you have sorrow. So,
yeah, okay.
I think there's an element of it. The restaurant gets overrun by like douchey bros, and there's a douchey bro factory right around the corner that they all get off work and they want, you know, they come here for our drink specials and we
Jaeger bombs.
Yeah. And if you're a restaurant where people come in all the time and they're just like, we want Jaeger bombs, you have one of two options. You either conform to their needs or you say, let's talk to our real estate agent and see if we can find something else. And it's sad to see people get run out of a neighborhood. The hope that you don't terraform a place, but rather try to become a part of the community.
I do feel like it's interesting to me, or meaningful, I should say, to be eating like this food in this restaurant in this location, like on this sort of cusp, but you can almost feel the wave coming.
Sure.
So how have you seen this neighborhood change from your childhood?
It's definitely getting whiter. It's definitely getting, you know, there's definitely more money coming in. It's a little safer than it was.
But so, like, when you walk around this neighborhood where you have a real history here, and you see a new restaurant pop up that's full of upper-middle-class white hipsters, how does that make you feel?
It definitely makes me feel a little less comfortable, because it feels as though that there's not room for me, whether they're white or whether they're even just all upper-middle-class finance people. There is a sense of, I'm the one who kind of sticks out. We're sitting in a restaurant now, and I'm the one brown person among, what, seven people in this restaurant. And
this is a West Indian restaurant.
Yeah, and I'm glad that people are eating here, and I'm glad that people have discovered food that, like I said, I grew up eating and that I've always enjoyed. But there's also a part of it that it feels a little weird to be the one. So, and that's a feeling that I know I've known well throughout my career and life. And like everything, some brown people showed up, so the numbers the tide is turning. Oh no. Sorry. It's totally fine. Yeah
come on, sit down.
Make yourself so comfortable. Serious. My goodness.
I know, it's it feels more serious than it is.
What are you doing?
We're
doing a food podcast.
Oh, okay. So is it good, because we haven't ordered
yet? Is the food good?
Yeah, is the food good?
I thought you were asking if the podcast was good. I don't know about the podcast, to be perfectly honest with you, but the food is delicious.
Okay, but yeah. Are you still going?
Well, he made me order a lot because he's paying for all this.
So, hold on.
Yeah, you should get into the food podcast game.
Yeah, I know, it's a great gig. This is actually work. We're working right now. So Wyatt and I are just talking about, you know, this neighborhood is changing a lot. We're talking about how, like, when a neighborhood changes, and a lot of money comes into a neighborhood, and a neighborhood may tend to get a lot whiter. And Wyatt was pointing out, he's like, here we are, this is a West Indian restaurant. Wyatt was the only person of color sitting in here.
Now we are,
you know,
three.
And then you guys walked right in, you know, like on cue, like it couldn't have been scripted any better, right, Wyatt?
Yeah.
You walk into a restaurant, especially a restaurant like known for West Indian food, and you walk in and you see that everyone eating there is white.
Yeah.
Is that something you notice, and what do you think about that?
Yeah, from my perspective, first I look to see who's cooking the food, and then I take into account the neighborhood. After I look at the cook, I take into account the neighborhood.
But when you look at the cook, what are you looking for?
Does the cook looks like, does that seem like a possibility for the type of cuisine that is being offered?
But then when you come in and see the people who are eating there, do you notice when you're the only person of color?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard not to notice.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys showed up, because Wyatt was just talking about how it feels to be the only person who looks a certain way. And now we have all different groups represented.
Now
do you feel better,
three.
Wyatt?
I do feel better. Yeah.
Well, we're glad we could help.
Yeah, no, thank
That's
you very
what
much.
We're here for.
Yeah, I assume you all. If I find myself any place, I can just send up like a bat signal.
Just let us send up the signal.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's like a chicken wing or what that would be, but we're coming.
It's a flare. It's a black emoji. It's a black hand emoji.
Yeah.
That's Wyatt Cenac, former Daily Show correspondent. His comedy special, Brooklyn, is available now on Netflix. Wyatt will be in Montreal at the Just for Laughs Festival later in July. For info on all his work, go to wyattcenac.com. Please remember to check out last week's episode of The Sporkful on Ramadan. And next week on the show, I'm taking your calls. In a dystopian future in which there can be only one cheese, what cheese should it be? Two listeners call in to debate.
With mozzarella, you have a lifetime of pizza. You have a lifetime of Italian food. Cheddar just doesn't work with everything. It's like Hugh Grant. It does one thing really well, but if you don't want that one thing, it's not going to help you.
That's next week. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at The Sporkful. This show is a production of WNYC and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sanny and me. We get help from Tim Ruggieri. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Caroline from Bloomington, Indiana, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.